Hello, and welcome to The Collision, Collider's podcast about movies, TV, and more. It is good to be back. My name is Matt Goldberg. I'm the managing editor, and with me today is senior editor Adam Chitwood.
Howdy, folks.
Today, we'll be talking about the 2014 Toronto International Film Festival. We've been back for about a week. It feels like the festival lasted forever, but in a good way. Toronto's exhausting, but in a good way, as opposed to Comic-Con, which is exhausting in the why-do-I-do-this-to-myself kind of way.
I'm so tired. What did I see? Some trailers. Oh, good.
Right, exactly. Whereas Toronto, it's like, what films do I have today? I have no idea. What day is it? I have no idea. But you're going to see movies. And I got to say, Adam, I think while there wasn't a breakout film in terms of like a Gravity or a 12 Years the Slave or 12 Years a Slave, I think that on the whole, I saw a lot of good movies, far more good movies than bad movies.
Yeah, quantity wise, it was good. It was spread out. The quality was spread out. The quality was good. Like you said, there was nothing that like I had to pick my jaw up off the floor afterwards that like Gravity or 12 Years a Slave, something that I was like, man, this blew me away. But there were a lot of quality films that I really liked, really enjoyed. I'm sure will be on my top 10 list and then I'm eager to catch again when they come to theaters.
Yeah, likewise. And there's some films where some of these will be coming to theaters by the end of this year and then others we're going to have to wait. So for instance, my favorite film of the fest, which I did not expect it to be my favorite, was Noah Baumbach's While We're Young. Because I'm not a huge Baumbach fan. I've never even seen Kicking and Screaming, but Margaret the Wedding didn't do much for me. Squid and the Whale is good, but I have some reservations about it. I really liked Frances Ha. And While We're Young feels like a flip side to it. Briefly, the plot is that Ben Stiller and Naomi Watts are a childless couple. All their friends have had kids, so they feel ostracized. They end up meeting a young couple played by Adam Driver and Amanda Seyfried, and they sort of start glomming onto them. And it's just a wonderful dissection of sort of these young people who don't have a culture of their own, and they're sort of co-opting an older generation. Meanwhile, the older generation feels lost, and so they want to feel younger. It's a great mishmash. Awesome performances, very funny, very insightful, and I think it is a really good flip side with Frances Ha, because whereas Frances Ha, the main character, is sort of this girl trying to get her life together, she has no money, she's kind of a ditz, but she's trying. You have the Adam Driver and Amanda Seyfried characters who are total hipsters, and they think they know everything, they're very entitled, and they're very confident, but they're also a little smarmy. And so I just like how the two films go together, but While We're Young, I was my favorite. I had heard people saying, oh, it's very good. I'm like, okay, it'll be very good. I went in and I loved it from start to finish. I don't know when it's coming out. It does have distribution, but whenever it comes out, definitely see it. Adam, what was your favorite?
Well, just kind of to dovetail on While We're Young, I enjoyed that one a lot. Like you, I wasn't a huge Noah Baumbach fan. I enjoy Noah Baumbach. I thought that Frances Ha was fun. I mixed feelings about Greenberg. I really like Squid and the Whale. But yeah, I was at the premiere of While We're Young, so I had no idea what this movie was about. I thought I went into it kind of thinking it was going to be like a Greenberg, kind of like a more dramatic with some like dark humor. But it is his most commercial movie to date, Noah Baumbach's. And that is not a knock. It's very funny, very plot-driven. And Adam Driver kills it again. So that was one of the nice, I guess, surprises for me, just in by nature of the fact that I knew absolutely nothing about it when I went to see it. But A24 Films picked that up. I'm sure it'll get a big release sometime next year. I wouldn't be surprised if it takes the Grand Budapest slot in March. But my personal favorite was another one that was a big surprise for me, Nightcrawler, with Jake Gyllenhaal. It's directed by Dan Gilroy, brother of Tony Gilroy, who wrote and directed Duplicity. And this is a nuts film. It is fucking crazy. Jake Gyllenhaal plays this kind of unhinged guy who's he's very strange, but very driven. He strikes you in the beginning as a guy who has obsessed over self-help books and memorized kind of, you know, the things you're supposed to say and the things you're supposed to do and that kind of stuff. And he's out looking for work. And this movie introduced me to a culture that I didn't know exist, but he stumbles upon gosh, I can't even remember the name of them. Guys who essentially go and videotape car
crashes. They're called Nightcrawlers.
Nightcrawlers, I guess so. Yeah. They go and they videotape car crashes, accidents that happen at night, and then sell the video of that to the local news networks, which will run that video on the morning news. So if the news is running a report like, oh, you know, there was this fiery crash on I-whatever last night, two fatalities, you know, this whatever, and they show the footage was shot by these guys who sell it for a profit. So Jake Gyllenhaal's character decides to go into business for himself after running into Bill Paxton doing this. Bill Paxton, kind of like a jaded pro at doing it, and rebuffs Gyllenhaal's offer to work with him. And it's just this descent into madness where he just gets so super serious and crazy about it. And Rene Russo plays the late night producer at a local news network who he starts to sell his videos to. And she's fantastic as well. A lot of people have described it as a mix between Taxi Driver and Network, which I would not be opposed to that description. But Gyllenhaal's incredible in the movie. I hope he gets some attention come awards time, but it's definitely one that should be on your radar. I'm sure it is. I'm sure you've seen the trailers and stuff that are really out there. It comes out on Halloween, which is kind of fitting because it's incredibly dark, but also really darkly funny and disturbing.
Yeah, it's a film that gets under your skin. It really does, in a way that you don't expect it to. And so I echo everything Adam just said about the film. It was one of my favorites there. I also really enjoyed Foxcatcher. Foxcatcher was one of my favorites, but not in the way I expected. The trailers, for me, it sort of set it up as this very intense movie, sort of like Nightcrawler, just something that really comes at you. And instead, it's very subdued, and it's very sad. That, to me, was the big takeaway, is how sad it is, in a way that it's just kind of, these characters are kind of pitiable in their goals and how they feel overlooked and neglected and how desperately their lives hinge on being champions and just living in the shadows of others. It was very moving, and just as has been said in other reviews, complete triple threat from your lead actors of Channing Tatum, Steve Carell, and Mark Ruffalo. All three absolutely amazing performances from them that you've never really seen before. And
Carell is like, you say that like he's unrecognizable, but he is literally unrecognizable. Like, I saw a photo of him afterwards and I was like, shit, like that is crazy work. And it's not just the makeup, like he just disappears into the character, and it's
he
nuts.
Really does.
But it is a surprising film. It's a very, very quiet film. I felt the same way as you. It was my most and Gone Girl were my most anticipated of the year, and I wasn't disappointed by it, but it was a very different movie than I was expecting. It's very, very calculated, very quiet, not intense, kind of not what you're expecting from the trailers, like Matt said.
Right. And I think Bennett Miller has sort of honed in. I don't know if I can necessarily decide like what is a Bennett Miller style, but I think as a director, he finds approaches to his material in ways that you would not expect. So Capote is not really a full biopic. It's focusing on one part of his life, but it's done in a way that sort of pulls him apart through his defining work. And then Moneyball is a film not really about, it's not a standard sports film. It's really, and I think the line that perfectly sums it up is, you have a character who hates losing more than he likes winning. And that's an interesting way to frame a sports story. And for Foxcatcher, this is it's based on a true story, and it's a very dark, twisted story, and yet it's not really sensationalized in this movie. It's, again, it's a very sad, very quiet, very subdued movie, not exploitative or sensationalized in any way.
Yeah, if I could draw a common quality between Bennett Miller's films, I'd say he's keen on telling stories about people who don't belong, people that are in a situation or in a place or in a job where they're not supposed to be or don't necessarily fit in. And in Foxcatcher, you see this just insane millionaire decide to coach an Olympic wrestling team just because he wants to. And it's incredibly disturbing.
Right, and it works on multiple levels. There's also a good subtext there about power, wealth and power in America. And there are these darkly comic moments in the film.
It is funny. It's gallows humor. It's very dark. I mean, a lot of films, like dark films, will draw levity to them. There are no quote-unquote jokes in Foxcatcher, but some of like the things that happen are just so ridiculous that you have to laugh, or the things that are said.
Steve Carell has one of my favorite lines of the year in Foxcatcher, and yes. I won't say what it is, but Adam knows what I'm talking about.
Yes.
And you will know what I'm talking about when you see Foxcatcher, which you totally should.
Indeed.
Yeah, and so that was great. Another film that Nightcrawler and Foxcatcher were on my radar. While We're Young, I mean, I was kind of aware of it. And then Red Army, I really like sports documentaries. What a fantastic sports documentary. It's the directorial debut of Gabe Polsky, who had previously worked with Werner Herzog as a producer. But this is Polsky's directorial debut. It's about hockey in Soviet Russia and how important it was to them during the Cold War. And on our side, we talk about, like, The Miracle on Ice. We had an uplifting Disney movie about it, for God's sakes. Imagine what happened to the people who lost. Imagine being in that culture. I think that's such a fascinating story, and it extends far beyond it. It's not just that one event, but it spans not just how these kids go into this system, but also what Russia was like at the time and how they kind of wanted to escape and go into the NHL. These fascinating narratives among the teammates, right now down to Fetisov and one of his, Vyacheslav Fetisov is the primary figure in the film as far as its backbone, but the relationship between he and one of his teammates and that sort of arc is fascinating. I just liked it in so many different ways. And to me, it's like, I love the 30 for 30 films. This feels like it's above those and something that's really epic in its own little way, because it is a piece of the Cold War, and not just in like a cutesy way. Like, when you hear what these guys went through and the insanity that they were pushed to, it's something that I really hope that people go to a theater and see, because we really don't get these sports documentaries in theaters that often, but this is top notch. So definitely check out Red Army. Adam, what were some other films for you that you didn't necessarily see coming, but they really hit you?
Well, one that was a pleasant surprise for me was Wild. I admired Dallas Buyers Club. Okay, I didn't think it was a great film. I thought it was more about the performances, so I wasn't necessarily, you know, the prospect of Jean-Marc Vallée, who directed Dallas Buyers Club, directing Wild, wasn't necessarily a draw for me. And if you've seen the trailer or the posters, it very much looked like, you know, one woman's journey as she tries to come to terms with life on a hike. It's kind of like, you know, I know what that's going to be. Maybe Lifetime-esque, you know, a little bit of Into the Wild in there. But I was really pleasantly surprised with just how deep it cuts. It's an unabashedly feminist film, which I really, really appreciated. And Reese Witherspoon brings it. She plays a three-dimensional female character who is not, you know, hiking to get away from her troubles or going on this hike just to, you know, say, you know, I did it, I've overcome adversity. I mean, the story revolves around this woman who she had an amicable divorce from her husband because she was just she chronically cheated on him, had tons and tons of affairs, casual sex with many anonymous people, developed an addiction to drugs, and, you know, they're still best friends, but they decided to get a divorce, and she decides to go and hike the Pacific Crest Trail, which goes from California up to Washington State. So it's a three-month hike, and she sets out on it, and the film is intercut with flashbacks to her life, but not in a traditional manner. It kind of comes in flashes, and it's really a story about rebirth, and it's not... What I really appreciate about it is that she doesn't apologize for her behavior. She owns up to what she's done, but she's not saying, I'm so sorry that I did all these things, you know, such a mistake. It's more of kind of coming to terms with your life as it is. And it's really a kind of eye-opening window into what it's like to be a woman. She encounters a bunch of people on her journey, but they're not kind of the stereotypical people that you meet. They all kind of come with the adage of don't judge a book by its cover. People may be different than you initially see them to be. But through her interactions with these people, you just kind of come to understand how hard it is to be a woman, even in just everyday situations, where if a guy thinks he's saying a compliment, the film is from her point of view, so you kind of feel it. You kind of feel that, you know, that's kind of not okay. That's kind of gross. And it's a really emotional journey, and Reese Witherspoon is fantastic. It's a really naked, bare portrayal of this character. It's based on a real person. But yeah, that was a big surprise for me, because I was expecting just a by the numbers, you know, hiking to get better journey, but I thought it was really well put together, dynamic visuals, also funny, a lot of humor, and I thought Reese was incredible in the lead role.
Yeah, that was, and I'm happy to hear that, because I'm like you. I thought like, oh, this is Eat, Pray, Love again, or
yeah,
even
yeah.
In, or even Into the Wild, and so yeah, that's really good to hear. Yeah, so there were definitely a lot of good movies this year.
A lot of biopics.
A lot of biopics. I mean, but aren't there always biopics,
that's
Adam?
True.
Aren't there always where we can learn from others? I think, to me, this is, and it won the TIFF Audience Award winner, which was Imitation Game, which was good. It was good.
It is good. It's a good movie.
It's a good movie. It's something we, that's the thing. It's a good movie. We're not at that, like, you know, you come out of TIFF, it's 12 Years of Slave or Gravity, which is going to win. Oh my God. But this is like, this is a good movie. I can see it's, I walked out of Imitation Game. And for those who don't know, it's about Alan Turing, who is a mathematician trying to break the Germans' Enigma code during World War II, but also being prosecuted in the after the war for being a homosexual. And it has sort of these, it's that plot, it's that timeline, the war timeline, and then there's also a timeline of him as a child or as a young man. You know, he's in boarding school, and they're sort of, it cuts between them, but it's very good. It's a film I walked out, I'm like, I can recommend this to my parents. They will like this movie. Tell your mom. It's that movie. Tell your mom.
It is. It feels like a four quadrant movie. One of those people that everyone can appreciate, because what I did like about it is that it's a biopic, but it's not shot like a biopic. It's almost shot like a spy thriller, because it's about them trying to crack the code. So it's really thrilling and enthralling in parts.
Yeah.
And there's some humor. I really appreciated the way it was put together and everything. It's a very good film. It will probably win Best Picture. It feels like one of those movies that's just like, you know, everyone can agree that
it's just sitting there.
Yeah.
It's just there. It's like, it's the one that's that inoffensive movie. That's mostly inoffensive. There's some things that, I mean, we're not even there yet to where they're gonna, let's just sit back and wait. Oh gosh, the backlash. The backlash, especially for biopics. It didn't happen that way.
Yeah.
It wasn't like that. Oh God. As if everyone's like, oh my God, biopics aren't 100% true. My word. I think another thing in terms of biopics that we haven't heard the last of is Theory of Everything.
Yeah.
Which is also a fine, I didn't like it quite as much as Imitation Game. There was a good article today on The Dissolve about five rules for geniuses on film, and it sort of used Theory of Everything as a test case of what to do and not do. And its sort of primary criticism is that it uses Stephen Hawking as someone to make you feel good, as opposed to who is Stephen Hawking as an individual. And I think that's a valid point.
Sure, it's more of, as opposed to The Imitation Game, it's more of a standard biopic. You know, you start at, it stays at Cambridge, and it follows all the way up through the 1980s, I think, is when it ends. 80s,
yeah,
90s, somewhere
there.
Around there. So it's, you know, kind of like that. But I found it to be incredibly emotional. Like, I was crying by the first act, and I was not expecting that. Eddie Redmayne's performance, and also equally important, Felicity Jones's performance as his wife, are both tremendous. I did also appreciate the fact that the movie is as much Jane Hawking's story as it is Stephen Hawking's story. It's not, you know, the Stephen Hawking show co-starring his doting wife who will be there to support him. She's very much his partner in the film, and as she was in real life. And that was a refreshing thing to see.
It was. I like that. I think it, to me, the film, what makes it stand out are the performances. That's that's really its ace in the hole. It's I thought the execution was good. I think the execution makes it more. I thought James Marsh made it, you know, visually all right. Better than a Lifetime movie. That's what I'm saying. I think the plot is Lifetime movie. I think it looks, it's well executed film. Good score, nice cinematography. It's a nice movie. That's the thing. It's a nice movie.
A lot of nice movies.
I will say, though, and it's one of those things where these films step out, and then they it's a preview night. And Telluride is a preview night for a preview night in that sense, because what we're seeing at TIFF, will these films will come out in the fall, and it's sort of these testing waters, and a film that tested the waters out the door and sank like a stone, The Judge.
That none of us saw.
There was a
large group of online journalists who we are all friends and, you know, talk to each other and everything. We all tried to see it. It didn't end up happening, and none, like, everyone's just like, you know what? I'll catch The Judge when it's in theaters in 2 weeks.
Right, we weren't hurting for The Judge.
No.
Because, and anyone who did see it, like, I heard the buzz out of it was like, yeah, it's the movie you expected it's going to be.
Yeah,
it's not going to surprise anyone. It's just there. And there was a new trailer today. It was like, I didn't watch the trailer. Adam, did you?
Yeah, it showed the whole
movie.
What's
the tone of the trailer?
It's the same. Schmaltzy, looks like Robert Downey Jr. makes it interesting. Like, it makes it at least engaged. Like, you won't fall asleep because Robert Downey Jr. is there, is what I'm saying.
Please put that on the poster. You won't fall asleep.
Well, and I also learned that it makes much more sense. I just learned that Janusz Kaminski shot it, Steven Spielberg's longtime cinematographer, who every now and then you're just like, oh shit, he made something else that's not a Spielberg movie. He did Funny People and How Do You Know, and Diving Bell and the Butterfly, and now this. But he's got that very specific Spielbergian light that he uses, and it was very evident in today's trailer.
Right. Now, a film that also sank like a stone, and it sort of bums me out, is Men, Women, and Children.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that film. I really did. And it was a film where, I mean, we really liked Labor Day last year. It was very earnest.
Yeah.
And we were almost puzzled over it. Why it's like, why did Paramount hold on to this? And apparently they knew that a lot of people weren't going to go for it. But this one, I'm looking at this one, and it never, after watching, I'm like, this really isn't going to go in the awards race. It's just not that kind of movie. Maybe it's not going to go. It's very wry, and it's good for what it is. And let's be clear, not every movie at TIFF is like awards or bust. It's not, it doesn't work that way. But Jason Reitman carries those expectations because of Juno, because of Up in the Air. And so I think Men, Women, Children, though, is very insightful about communication in the digital age in a way that isn't like a PSA and isn't pandering. And basically everything, I'm going to use the movie Disconnect, which no one fucking saw, as just everything that can be done wrong. I think that's almost, it helps Men, Women, and Children a little bit for me personally. But I think the film stands on its own. I think it's clever. I think it's insightful. And I'm a little surprised that more people didn't think that.
I am too. I thought it was excellent. You and I were there together. We saw it with a small group of journalists. It was, you know, we had heard nothing. There was no response yet. This was the first screening. And I thought it was fantastic. And as I started seeing the reviews come out and kind of looking into the negative reviews, they seemed to harp on the technology angle and how it was, you know, used wrong or maybe felt disingenuous. And I came away, you know, the movie really isn't about that at all. It isn't about technology and the dangers of the internet. It's about humanity. It uses, you know, life in the digital age as a conduit to tell these stories, but it's not really about that. And I feel like maybe people got too hung up on the techno aspects of it, because that's, and I mean, it tells this myriad of stories of a bunch of different loosely connected characters in a way that feels organic. It's not like Crash where it's like, oh, what a coincidence, the racist cop is here to save your life. It's not like these lives are all like, oh, that's how they connect. They just exist, and they exist organically. And I thought that was done well, and the performances are great. It's Adam Sandler's most subdued performance of his career. made me I would genuinely got angry watching the movie when he was doing this dramatic scene that was really fantastic. I was so angry because he doesn't do those anymore, and he can be so good.
Yeah, exactly. If he just he's like, but I want to go to Africa and you know with my friends, and then someone will pay me to do it.
And Dean Norris, Breaking Bad's Dean Norris, is almost steals the movie for me. I thought he was the standout performance, along with Ansel Elgort from Fault in Our Stars.
Yeah, he's having a year. I also really liked Caitlin Dever. Thought she was great.
So don't avoid this movie, people. Don't listen to the
negative.
Yeah,
don't write it off. And the other thing is it's interesting you say that about, like, oh, it's just about the technology. The technology really tapers off in the second half. It's really not about that anymore.
It's a hook. Away.
It really does. And then it's just it launches it. It's a launching point, and then it just lets it sail into being about mostly these character relationships that I think are very well done and well acted. You mentioned Adam Sandler. There were two Adam Sandler movies this year at TIFF. I was really excited for the other one, Tom McCarthy's The Cobbler. And I think Tom McCarthy's previous three films, The Station Agent, The Visitor, and Win-Win, are all great. And I was really excited for it until I started hearing things. And I just didn't hear it. It wasn't just like, oh, I didn't care for it, or oh, I didn't really do it. The word on it was so toxic, it drove me away.
Yeah. It was I didn't speak to one person that was like, oh, it was okay, or oh, I kind of liked it. Everyone was like, that movie is terrible. And let me tell you why, because it's so, like, fantastically terrible. Like, people wanted to get out, like, the craziness of the terribleness of it and try to explain how bad it was.
Yeah. And at that point, it's like, TIFF is too short. What happened was, is I had a choice in that time slot between The Cobbler and While We're Young. And I'd heard nothing but terrible things about The Cobbler and nothing but good things about While We're Young. And I'm like, fuck it. I'm not going to waste my time on The Cobbler. It'll get distribution. It's as Adam Sandler, whatever. And I'm very glad I went to go see While We're Young. But that was, to me, one of the biggest surprises, especially after seeing Men, Women, and Children. I was under the impression, like, oh, when Adam Sandler does dramas, he scales it back, and it's therefore better. And apparently with The Cobbler, that was not the case. Because apparently, I guess he doesn't even scale it back, if that's my understanding.
Yeah,
not really.
The description I heard was that The Cobbler is like just a regular Adam Sandler movie that was somehow written and directed by Tom McCarthy. Like just a normal, kooky, zany Adam Sandler movie that Tom McCarthy directed.
This is not Tom McCarthy's year. He also wrote Million Dollar Arm, and that film is fucking terrible.
I did not see that film.
It's awful. It's very racist. and so, yeah, not his year, but that film, again, you want to talk about, there's films that sink like a stone, and that just thing crashed into a mountain.
Yeah.
So that did not pan out. So there was that. Any other films that you think sort of whiffed at TIFF?
I wouldn't say Rosewater whiffed. Rosewater seems to be a movie that everyone's like, you know what, that's a fine movie. And not much else to say about it. Rosewater is Jon Stewart's directorial debut. And I thought it was fine. It's a little boring, a little slow, a couple of odd choices here and there, but mostly fine. Just a fine movie. I probably won't remember it. I am interested to see more from director
Jon
Stewart.
It took me a few seconds to remember what Rosewater even was until you started going into description.
It's kind of forgettable. It's not like it's like unbelievably forgettable. There's nothing about it that stands out as like, this is the major issue of Rosewater. It's just kind of, this was a very personal story to Jon Stewart. It's one of a lot of stories that could have been told from that area or that time period. And, you know, I get it that it was very personal to him and something that he felt like he wanted to cover. And it's a fine story, but nothing any particularly spectacular or enlightening.
No. Now, if you want to talk about a film that is completely forgettable, let me tell you about The Drop. The Drop was by far the hardest film I had to review at TIFF because I had nothing to say about it. It's a film that's there, which is really disappointing when you consider the cast: Tom Hardy, James Gandolfini, Noomi Rapace, Matthias Schoenaerts, And then the director, Michael Roskam, who directed Bullhead, which is vibrant and exciting and dangerous. Everything that The Drop isn't. It's also based on a Michael Lehane story, and he wrote the script.
Dennis Lehane.
Dennis Lehane. My mistake. Michael Lehane is an asshole. That's a person I just made up. No, Dennis Lehane. Sorry, my bad. But he wrote the script, and it's still not forgettable. My point is, there's a lot of talent on that movie. And all I remember is that Tom Hardy plays with a puppy. That's really all I got.
I thought it was more memorable than that.
I had nothing.
I liked it a little bit more than you did. I thought it was all right.
I didn't dislike it. It's just there. Yeah.
There's more to it. Tom Hardy's doing a really weird performance, and there's some weird things that happen. And there's the puppy.
Come on. Puppy. That's the thing. It's the puppy. That's the takeaway. More movies need Tom Hardy and puppies. Locke is a fantastic film, but what if it had a puppy? Just hear me out.
The puppy in the driver's seat.
The puppy's in the navigator seat. It's in the. That's where the puppy is. So yeah, The Drop. I had hopes for it, and so that was disappointing, as well. Then. Let's get to the bad films. But Adam, I don't think you saw anything you really hated, did you?
I didn't see anything I really hated. I really didn't like Manglehorn. That was a tough one to sit through. I was just kind of like, I could be doing other things right now. I was like, I could leave. I didn't love the Last 5 Years. That one was more frustratingly bad because Last 5 Years is a musical with Anna Kendrick and a guy named Jeremy Jordan. It's written and directed by Richard Legravanese, who directed Beautiful Creatures, which I thought was underrated. So I went into it looking forward to it. It's a musical, like it's a full-on musical. There are maybe 2 lines of dialogue in the whole movie, like it's all singing. And it's the story of, it's a love story, it's a story of a relationship, but it's told in 2 different directions. It opens with a song by Anna Kendrick at the end of their 5-year relationship. They're divorced, she's never gonna see him again. The next scene is a song sung by him, and it's the very beginning of their relationship, the first time that they hook up and start to kind of have feelings for each other. And so it flip-flops from scene to scene throughout the rest of the movie until they kind of meet in the middle, and then so that's how it tells the story of the relationship. Anna Kendrick is great in the movie, very good singer. The songs are pretty good. The guy is horribly miscast, so it just does not work, because one half of this love story is not believable, not charming, nothing. So that was frustrating, because I was like, this could have been so much better. But no, they just terribly miscast the male lead.
Yikes.
Yeah, so that was disappointing. And Good Kill was disappointing, because I like Andrew Niccol. It was fine, I guess. That was less bad. I guess I didn't see any terrible movies, is what I'm trying to say. I saw movies that had glimmers of hope in them. Except for Manglehorn, which was just, are we done yet? Is this movie over?
Yeah. That was a disappointing one from David Gordon Green. That was disappointing. I'm glad he made it.
Sure.
I'd rather him make those movies than The Sitter, but still. The film I fucking hated was Welcome to Me. It was the worst. It was the plot of the film is that Kristen Wiig plays a woman with borderline personality disorder, which to this film means she does kooky shit. And she wins the lottery, and she decides she wants to spend all of her money doing an Oprah-like talk show, which is just her doing kooky shit. And it's a film that's just really making fun of its protagonist, and in a way that is not insightful, and where the point where they were making fun of her, that's mean and that's bad on enough on its own. But what really tipped it for me is the film is ridiculously smarmy about it, because the whole notion is, oh man, people are watching her on this TV show and getting their jollies. Man, that's so wrong. And you're doing it too. Gotcha. And I was like, fuck you. I know exactly what you're doing. And you're playing kooky music over it. So don't play this like, ooh, you're in on it card. it was so bad. And there's like talented people on board. Kristen Wiig is the star, and it's just infuriating so much that I felt angry towards this film. That was the only one that did it. Other films were just like really disappointing. Like Escobar, Paradise Lost was just super lame. A huge disappointment for me was Oren Moverman's Time Out of Mind. If you want to talk about miscasting, let me tell you about miscasting Richard Gere as a homeless man. Now, in Time Out of Mind, what they did was they did a lot of long shots. They would basically just put Richard Gere on a bench and see, like, oh man, people ignore the homeless. Even if they look like Richard Gere, isn't that strange? Because, like, if Richard Gere was just in nice clothing and didn't look homeless, people would be, like, coming up for his autograph. But we ignore the homeless. I'm like, this is true. And it's something where it's like, I want to feel responsible. And Adam, we're going to get to you seeing another film about the homeless.
Yes.
Because I want you to talk about it.
I had blocked it out of my mind. I forgot about it until you said that.
Yes. So, but it's one of those like, oh, this is really well intentioned, but it's horribly executed because it still feels like it's basically the equivalent of dropping money in a panhandler's cup. Like, you just want to do something, but you can't change anything. And you're just like, did I do enough? I feel like I want to do something. But Richard Gere is just horribly miscast. Who is really well cast and disappeared into the role was Kira Sedgwick, who plays another homeless person. I'm watching this like, is that fucking Kara Sedgwick? I didn't know. I always knew watching Richard Gere in, who's essentially just in dirty clothes. Like, that's all he is in the film. He's in slightly dirty clothes and has, like, a scar on his head or something. And so that was a big disappointment because I really like Oren Moverman's previous films, The Messenger and Rampart. And he did write, however, he did co-write one of the better films I saw at TIFF, which was Love and Mercy, which is Brian Wilson biopic.
Yeah, that was fantastic. As a ginormous Beach Boys fan, I thought Love and Mercy was very, very well done. Tells the story of Brian Wilson, the musical genius behind the Beach Boys, where Paul Dano plays him, young Brian Wilson, during the recording of Pet Sounds and the attempted recording of Smile, and then John Cusack plays the older Brian Wilson in 1990, where he's under the legal guardianship of an abusive psychiatrist, controversial psychiatrist played by Paul Giamatti. That was another biopic that was very interestingly told. I thought that it was cut together in an interesting way. It didn't just say, like, here's the whole life of Brian Wilson. Pick out the interesting parts. It focused on two very specific time periods, which I liked. And it was very oddly specific in the details of Brian Wilson's life and the recording of Pet Sounds, which was awesome.
Yes. Yeah, I really enjoy it because I'm not as much of a diehard Beach Boy fan. I mean, I like their music, but I thought it was really interesting as well because it goes really into the recording process in the concrete, and it doesn't get into these dumb music biopic moments where basically if you do something that Walk Hard hasn't made fun of, you're on the right track. So there's no moment where it's like someone saying, "Man, Brian, God only knows," and he's like, "God only knows," and like cut to them making the song. It's not like that at all, and so I really appreciated that. But let's get back to the homeless. Adam, tell them what you saw.
I saw a movie called Shelter, which is the directorial debut of Paul Bettany, and this movie was not good. It stars Jennifer Connelly, Paul Bettany's wife, as a homeless woman, and Anthony Mackie as a homeless man who fall in love on the streets of New York. They both have mysterious pasts that start to unravel during the course of the movie, but it's boringly told. It's exploitative in the fact that it's like, look at these homeless people have lives too. Like, they're people, and they look like Jennifer Connelly, which you cannot make Jennifer Connelly look like a homeless person. It's impossible. She's too pretty, even though she lost an insane amount of weight for this movie. But it goes to some really, really dark places that are just kind of out of nowhere, and you're like, whoa, what is happening now? And it was just bad. It was just a really bad movie. Poorly put together
movie. I think
we
can tell them. Let's tell them the epigram on the film. Just tell them the epigram. Who is the film dedicated to, Adam?
As the credits come up, the dedication says, "For the couple who lived outside my house," which is just like, I understand what you're trying to say, Paul Bettany, but that's just kind of like, from my third bathroom in my penthouse apartment, I saw this homeless couple outside and started to ruminate on their lives. what they may be up to.
And that's the thing. They're very well intentioned, and clearly that's just not enough.
Yeah.
Good intentions aren't enough.
I imagine that epitaph will be gone when the movie is released.
Oh, I don't even know anymore. There are these films where it's like, oh, no, they'll change that, and they never fucking change it. And it's like, oh, that's dumb, and then it'll be released, and you'll ask. It's like, is that still there? It's like, oh, yeah, that's still there. I'm like, ugh. So, I mean, I felt that way about Red Lights, where the ending should totally be changed, and it was never changed. But, yeah, maybe it'll be gone, but will that save the film, Adam?
No. It did not get distribution, so we'll see where it ends up.
Exactly.
We'll see what happens. The Riot Club got distribution. I did enjoy The Riot Club. That was a good movie. Like a collegiate Wolf of Wall Street.
Yes. That's one I definitely wanted to see, and I was so exhausted I couldn't see it. I hit my breaking point where I was so sleep deprived. I was like, I need a nap. I will see, because The Riot Club does have distribution, and I will see it. Buzz is very positive. I was just like, and plus you reviewed it, so it wasn't like I was skipping out on a review either. But yeah, I was so exhausted, and then I went to go see other things. So yeah, there's a brief recap of what we saw and things we liked and didn't like and what was hit and what was not. TIFF is a huge part of the awards race. Adam, where are we right now with that, now that we've finished TIFF? What's up? What's down?
What's up? What's down?
Come on, let's run through it. Pundit this shit.
Imitation Game is up. Theory of Everything is up. Wild is up, I would say, even though it seemed like not a lot of people saw Wild at TIFF, so the response was positive, but it wasn't like, you know, I think everyone had the same idea of like, oh, I know what that is, I'll see it later. So that everyone went to go see these other movies as well. Foxcatcher is about even. I think people are, not to say it's down in the race, but people are seeing it. They're like, oh, that's what kind of movie it is. Like, I imagine Foxcatcher will get a Best Picture nomination, maybe Best Director. I'm not sure. I do know that they're putting Steve Carell and Channing Tatum both in the Best Actor race. Channing Tatum is undoubtedly the lead of the movie. Steve Carell could arguably go supporting, but they're... Sony Pictures Classics is submitting them both for Best Actor, and I imagine Steve Carell will come out on top there just because he has the flashier role, even though I think Tatum is equally, if not more so, deserving for his fearless performance, almost silent performance. It's very quiet.
That's a little disappointing for me because, honestly, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it would seem that the way to get the most nominations isn't to put two actors into a very crowded Best Actor field, but to play the Best Supporting Actor field, which, again, correct me if I'm wrong, seems relatively bare, and you do have Carell and Ruffalo who could, you know, submit both of them there. It seems like those are better odds, because we came out of TIFF being like, oh man, Jake Gyllenhaal should be in the Best Actor conversation, and Benedict Cumberbatch should be, and Eddie Redmayne should be. Like, we came out with all of this, and meanwhile, like, the Best Actors category is like fucking crickets. And so, yeah, it just seems odd that that's the way they're submitting Foxcatcher.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, I mean, I wouldn't say it's odd. I think it makes sense. I mean, Steve Carell is going to get a ton of press if he gets a Best Actor nomination. That's a lot of press for the movie. And I do expect he'll get a nomination for it. So, you know, that's one we'll see. Imitation Game, I would say, came out on top from the fest. Most people are putting it at number two or three in the current Best Picture standings behind Boyhood is kind of the undisputed front runner right now, and then Birdman, but we haven't seen Birdman. And once Birdman hits bigger at New York Film Festival, we get a gauge of that audience reaction. We'll know better of its chances. But Imitation Game is a major player, and also helping Imitation Game is the fact that it's the Weinstein Company. So Harvey Weinstein has a serious contender in the race this year, as opposed to kind of just pushing something like Philomena or
as opposed to
Mandela.
Falling ass backwards into Philomena.
Yeah. Okay, he was like, here, everyone, August Osage County is my big awards movie, and everyone's like, nope. And he was like, oh, you guys like Philomena? All right, well, that's it. So you've got him, Cumberbatch, undoubtedly in the Best Actor race. I imagine he will get a nomination. Keira Knightley should have no trouble getting a Supporting Actress nomination for that movie as well. Adapted Screenplay, possibly Best Director. That's a big multi-nomination movie. Theory of Everything, the heart goes a long way. I think the emotion of that can catch on to voters. Eddie Redmayne absolutely in the Best Actor conversation. I would say he gets a nomination as well. So out of TIFF, I would say Redmayne, Cumberbatch, and Carell are guaranteed Best Actor nominations. I would be, well, not guaranteed, I would say I would be surprised if they don't get Best Actor nominations. And possibly Timothy Spall for Mr. Turner as well.
And it sounds like Jake Gyllenhaal's kind of on the bubble.
Yeah, that's one that's, I mean, you're going to have to see. It's a wait-and-see attitude. Depends on if Open Road Films decides to put the cash into a campaign, because as people might not know, Oscars are not easily won without a studio with a putting its full force into an Oscar campaign. I would put Jake Gyllenhaal in the conversation. He's kind of, I would say he's in a dark horse nominee. But if it hits big with critics when it opens on Halloween, and if Open Road puts the money into Q&As and Academy screenings in LA, he could get a shot. I think it's absolutely deserving. And I think Renee Russo from that movie is deserving of Best Supporting Actress.
Do you think she has a better shot?
I would say so, just based on the fact that the Best Supporting Actress category is thin, so it's easier to get into.
Right.
But yeah, and also it depends on if Open Road is going to spend the money. But Theory of Everything, I think Eddie Redmayne is a very serious contender for Best Actor nomination, possibly the trophy. And Felicity Jones should very likely get a Best Actress nomination. She's fantastic in that movie. And then, we'll see how it does with voters. If it's a giant hit, Best Picture nomination is not out of the question. All that good stuff. It's the emotional one, so you can get stuff like that. Rosewater, not much of a player. I don't think it's anything really that big. Maybe a screenplay nomination for Jon Stewart. Wild, again, we're going to have to see, but Reese Witherspoon, I would absolutely put her in the Best Actress race. And, you know, if Dallas Buyers Club can get a Best Picture nomination, Wild should be able to get one as well. Because I think
there
it's
are
far,
like nine
far
slot
and away the better
people.
Movie.
There are basically nine slots for all intents.
They are,
purposes.
But there are, but this year is different because in order to come up with a
what what now, god damn it,
in order to come up with the nominees, instead of, so Academy members, when they put out their initial ballot, like, there's no nominations list, they're just writing down the movies that they think should be Best Picture. Instead of putting down 10, they put down 5. So it becomes a thing of, you know, a movie like Dallas Buyers Club, if you're putting down 10, it's probably going to make it at 7 or 8 on a bunch of ballots. But if you only have 5 choices, how many ballots is Dallas Buyers Club, or in this case Wild, going to end up on? So it becomes a little tougher. Might help in weeding out some of the you know, least strong nominees and stuff like that. But those are really the big players to come out of TIFF. I think Mr. Turner will get a bunch of nominations for, you know, in the craftsman categories, costume design, production design, cinematography, absolutely. Possibly Best Actor. I wasn't crazy about the film myself. I found it dry, but I know I know critics really liked it. Some critics really liked it. So we'll see with that one. But yeah, I mean, it's not like at this time last year, it was like, all right, unless something huge happens, the race is between Gravity and 12 Years a Slave. Like, there are no other serious contenders. But this year it's more open. But as it stands now, just based on what I'm hearing, what I'm seeing, what I'm reading, and what I have seen, I would say the likeliest Best Picture nominations at the moment would be Boyhood, Birdman, Imitation Game, Foxcatcher, and I guess maybe Theory of Everything. I would probably put Unbroken in there. Again, we haven't seen Unbroken, but we'll see.
Yeah, so it's we. All right, people. So there's your little audio Oscar beat in terms of what's happening.
And of course, Interstellar is on the way. If that breaks big, it could get into a bunch of different categories. You know, the Academy likes Christopher Nolan, so
yeah,
we'll see.
We'll see. We shall see. Yeah, I would say if you asked me to pick the winner today, I would say Imitation Game. Just because it feels like it just hits all the bullet points. Like, I know Birdman is ahead and Boyhood is beloved, but I'm going by the, like, just it just feels like that that sweet spot that the Academy loves.
Yeah, what will your grandparents just rave and rave about?
Exactly. I'm old and white. What would I enjoy? Well, I guess even though he's a homo, I can get on board with him, what he did. Yes.
And I need to, like, put a footnote on this moment and say, like, 6 months or 4 months from now, when I'm saying I absolutely hate The Imitation Game, I have to remember that I enjoyed it when I saw it, not remember all the backlash and everything that comes afterwards.
Because exactly.
If it becomes the King's Speech again, I'm going to go nuts.
But you said you hated King's Speech from the get-go.
I did not like the King's Speech, no.
There you go. So, yeah. I like it fun. But I'm someone who definitely doesn't feel it deserves to win Best Picture. But that's beside the point. That's the past. This is the future. And the future holds more Oscar prognostication.
It's a good field, though. I mean, I know awards are silly and everything like that, but if you look at the contenders of this year, like, just based on what we saw, like, those are really fantastic performances that really deserve to be seen and recognized by people like Felicity Jones and Eddie Redmayne, Benedict Cumberbatch, Steve Carell, Channing Tatum, Mark Ruffalo. These are all great performances that I'm really excited for people at large to start hearing about and seeing. And Reese Witherspoon. I mean, I know that people have very preconceived notions about Reese Witherspoon. Believe me, I did as well. But she is genuinely fantastic in this movie.
Yes, I am definitely now more interested in seeing Wild. Okay, so that's TIFF, people. It is in the books. And now it's time to look ahead to other things. As now we have finally pulled out of the dry spell of late August, early September, and now there's exciting movies coming up again. Huzzah! So, we will get to those in the weeks ahead. I mean, I'm looking forward to a bunch of stuff. I know you are, Adam, in the weeks ahead.
I am counting down the hours until Gone Girl.
I know, right?
It's so hard. I forgot that it's like October 3rd. Like, that's soon. That's really
it is.
Soon.
It really is.
Keep reading all these interviews with Fincher and getting so excited.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. I'm really hoping that that he brings out again. I rewatched Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and it's just not good. It is to me by far his weak. I can't count Alien 3 against him, but Dragon Tattoo, I got a lot of problems with that movie. So Gone Girl to me is like, let's bounce back, because I love the book. I think Dragon Tattoo is very weak source material to begin with, but Gone Girl is a fantastic read. Good cast. Great director, let's do this thing. But we'll get to that when it comes out. Right now, we're here, and we just talked about TIFF. What do you got in recommendations, Adam?
Nothing.
Okay, you know what? You know what?
We're doing recommendations. Since we're
it's all right. You know why we're not going to do recommendations? Because we just recommended you a shit ton of films, people.
We did.
We went to TIFF, and we told you to see a lot of movies when they came out. So those are our recommendations this week. Adam,
absolutely.
If you had to pick one movie from TIFF that you think you'd want people to see the most, what would it be?
Oh, that's a tough one. Because I could go with something like Nightcrawler, which is fantastic, and I want people to see. Or it could go with something that people are unlikely to see based on trailers or posters, like Wild or Men, Women, and Children. But I will have to go with Nightcrawler, because that movie is nuts.
Yes. And I will go with While We're Young. That is my choice. But Nightcrawler's up there, too. Okay, so thank you for listening, everyone. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you should follow us on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Matt Goldberg. Adam, where can we find you on Twitter?
@AdamChitwood.
All right, thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll be back with you next week.